weeks away from what one might say is the most solemn ceremony that we as Christians, that we as the Church of God observe. And of course, that is the Passover. It is a solemn evening of reflection and understanding, and it is important to each and every one of us. Why do we keep the Passover on the night that we do, and in the manner that we do? You know, there is controversy on the night on which the Passover should be kept. How do we know that we keep the Passover at the right time and not at the same time as clearly the Jewish community today does? Don't we get our practice from the Jews? Why don't we keep the Passover at the beginning of the first day of unleavened bread as the Jewish community does? Well, today I would like to take you through a tour of the Scriptures to establish, or reestablish, I hope, why we keep the Passover at the beginning of the 14th day of the month of Abib, or Nisan, and not on the 15th day, as is the tradition for Jewish practice. To do so, it will be necessary to examine the original instruction regarding the Passover found in Exodus 12. So if you begin by turning in our Bibles to Exodus 12, we'll examine the Passover of Exodus 12. We'll go through a number of points today during the sermon that I hope will be instructive for us. And again, I hope a good review for all of us, maybe some new information for some of us. The first important point to note is this: not every question will be answered. Not every question will be answered. What do I mean by that? After all the points of discussion that we'll go through during the sermon today, there may still be in some people's minds some unanswered questions. As we go through, there still will seem to be some scriptures in the Old Testament that support a Passover beginning at the first day of unleavened bread. So we'll look at a few of those to come to better understand them and to put them in their proper context. A historical analysis of the Passover as recorded in the Old Testament does not reveal every exact detail or answer every question. The historical record, frankly, is spotty and therefore sometimes incomplete. And it's important that we start with that to say there are still some scriptures that, boy, that's a question. I wonder why it was written that way. Now again, this being said, I think it is very possible to display that the vast majority of evidence does clearly lean in one direction. That is, the Passover being held at the beginning of the 14th day at sunset, eaten during the night portion of the 14th, then the Israelites departing from Egypt the next night as the first day of unleavened bread begins on the 15th day. So members of the Church of God can, as they participate in the Passover service, do so with confidence, knowing that it is indeed being done at the proper time and in the proper manner. So we begin that not every question is answered. Let's go on to a second statement about the Passover of Exodus 12, and that is, some events are one-time events, and others are repeating events. So, one-time versus repeating. There were a number of things regarding this first Passover that were unique, never to occur again in all of history. Let's look here in Exodus chapter 12 and begin reading in verse 1 to see if we can begin to discern what were one-time events and what are to be repeating events year after year after year. Beginning in verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, in the land of Egypt, said this, verse 2. Clearly, this will be a repeating event. This month shall be your beginning of months. It would have to be a repeating. If God says, here's the calendar I'd like you to use, it would have to be a repeating event, a year by year event. This month shall be the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. So we often try to help those on the outside of the truth understand what a logical calendar God put together. It begins in the spring of the year in the northern hemisphere, where life is budding, new life is occurring. It doesn't begin in the dead of winter when everything is hibernating or dead, we might say. So a repeating event in verse 2. Verse 3, speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb according to the household of his father, a lamb for a household. This, in the nation of Israel, would be a repeating event year after year after year. A lamb chosen on the 10th day and set aside for these 4 days until it would be sacrificed. We've often wondered why on the 10th day of the month. Was it simply a matter of proper preparation? That may be the case. Rather than scampering around for a lamb at the last minute, you have the time here to select the lamb, to examine the lamb, and to hold it until it is time to sacrifice. Verse 4, and if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb. Now, God does not say here how many people that might be. I'm sure it would depend on the size of the lamb as well. But a two-person household couldn't eat an entire lamb, so they might combine with households on either side of them. And again, each year, this would be done, a lamb selected according to the number of persons, according to each man's need. Now, I don't know if God intended then appetite to be a part of this. Were they large people eating a great deal? Were they small people eating a lot less? We're not told. Now again, the Pharisees, of course, later on would come to say, well, you have to know exactly how many this is. Since it doesn't tell us here, we've got to come up with a number. Well, wouldn't God intend each family to just work that out on their own? Well, of course he would. But there would come to be, in the Pharisaic realm, an exact number of how many would be appropriate for a lamb, and the size of the lamb, etc. But year after year, on the 14th day, or on the 10th day, this lamb would be chosen and set aside. Verse 5 gives some instruction about the lamb itself. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Now it is true that any sacrifice given before God was to be without blemish. But especially this one is noted that it shouldn't have any obvious flaw. Now we'll come to see over the course of time that this lamb was to represent Jesus Christ. And so, since he was perfect and without sin, this lamb should likewise be without blemish or obvious default. A male of the first year, you may take it from the sheep or from the goats. So we don't often think of the Passover goat, but that was certainly just as acceptable as the Passover lamb. Verse 6, you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. I suppose one of the reasons God had the 10th be the day that the lamb was chosen is because not everyone would be pastoral. Not everyone would be a farmer. And so it would take time to get lambs together for those city dwellers who needed lambs, who didn't maybe have lambs of their own. So plenty of preparation time in advance. Of course, as we look at that, it's plenty of preparation time for us as Christians as well, prior to the Passover. So keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. So as the beginning of the 14th day started, that lamb was killed as the sun was setting. What is interesting, or as the sun set, and then just before it became dark outside. So each year, verses 1 through 6, in essence, would be followed. A lamb picked out on the 10th, sacrificed on the 14th. Now it is interesting as well, it says at the end of verse 6, the whole assembly of the congregation. So the original Passover was a family celebration in which each household selected their lamb, and then they, maybe with their neighbors if it was small households, they themselves slit the lamb's throat, drained the blood, as we'll see, and prepared that sacrifice to be eaten. So they would have roasted it themselves as well. Now verse 7 shows something that would be done once in all of history. And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they shall eat it. This one-time event was going to be unique in all of history, because this would be the only time that the death angel would pass over in the houses that were marked with this blood, told the death angel, or the angel of death, we might say, however we want to phrase that, the messenger of death. It told that messenger or angel of death that this was a house to pass over. And again, the symbolism becomes rich as we get to the New Testament. Israelites would not understand this symbolism until they received God's Holy Spirit. Verse 8 then. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire. With unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head with its legs and its entrails. The whole thing, you might say. Now again, obviously entrails were taken out. The organs may have been left to be roasted as well, but the entrails, the intestines, etc., would have been taken out in the slaughtering process. Verse 10, you shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. So this was to be done each and every year. You would actually eat the roasted Passover lamb. Verse 11, a one-time event. Thus you shall eat it with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. So shall you eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. So the ceremony gets its name from the death angel passing over the homes that were marked with the blood of the Lamb. Why a one-time event? In verse 11. Why don't we wear a belt on our waist and sandals on our feet? What's the point here? The point is traveling clothes. They were to be preparing to leave Egypt. All of this was leading up to them leaving Egypt. So they were to be dressed and packed and ready to go. Now, they would not leave their homes until the morning, as we know. It says, verse 12, for I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, one-time event, both man and beast, And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Eternal. So showing that he was far more powerful than any of the gods that the Egyptians could conceive. Verse 13, now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. So we don't paint blood on our houses after this night because the death angel only passed over that once. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. This is one of the reasons I hesitate to use the phrase the death angel, the messenger of death. It seems God says, I will pass over. So was it actually the one who became Jesus Christ who destroyed the firstborn in Egypt and spared the Egyptians? I think there may be some rich symbolism in that as well. So I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So death struck once. The death of the firstborn Egyptians, once, not more than once. So we begin to see this separation of some things that were done once and other things that would be asked to be repeated year after year after year. So this day, he says in verse 14, shall be to you a memorial. So the Passover was to be an annual occurrence, a memorial. And you shall keep it as a feast to the Eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. So to this day, we keep the Passover, this everlasting ordinance. Now, we'll come to see in the New Testament that Jesus Christ alters the symbol. He does not do away with the Passover, but he alters the symbol to reflect the next stage, we might say, in God's plan. So the passing over of the Hebrews' homes that were marked with blood, a one-time event. Death of the Egyptian firstborn, a one-time event. Fleeing from Egypt, a one-time event. So the Passover of Exodus 12 is a mixture of repeating annual events and some unique one-time in all of history events as well. Now let's go on to a third point about the Passover of Exodus 12. And that is, the Bible records two separate festivals. The Bible records two separate festivals. We already read in verse 14, this day, this single day. So there's a festival titled the Passover. This is the Lord's Passover, read earlier. That is a single day festival. And you shall keep it a feast. In other words, a festival to the Eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by everlasting ordinance. So we have one festival titled the Lord's Passover. We never refer to it as the Lord's Supper. We don't refer to it as the Eucharist. We don't refer to it as communion, because none of those are biblical titles for this festival. It is called the Passover, or the Passover of the Eternal. The Eternal passed over Israel. Then in verse 15, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses, and as the Hebrew says, you shall have removed leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So the eating of unleavened bread would be a reflection of our honor toward God, that we do as he asked. And there would become, for Christians, rich symbolism in this unleavened bread. Frankly, Israel, the Jews, would never really truly understand what the symbolism of unleavened bread portrays. They just don't understand. It's sad, but it's true. Shows how you can go through the motions without true understanding. Now, some will say, well, look, you were supposed to eat unleavened bread with the Passover. So the Passover has to be included in these 7 days of unleavened bread. Well, that's a reasonable argument. The problem is, it's just not true. It's not true. Just because the Passover was eaten with unleavened bread does not make it one of the 7 days of unleavened bread. It's important to note that every sacrifice was eaten with unleavened bread, not just the Passover sacrifice. So there was a purity to the sacrifices that God expected at all times. So just because, again, the Passover was eaten with unleavened bread does not make it a part of the 7 days of unleavened bread that would follow the Passover. So again, unleavened bread was eaten with all the sacrifices. So that's often a point of confusion. And that's one of the reasons some would say, no, the Passover has to be eaten at the start of that first day of unleavened bread, not at the beginning of the day before. So we would understand that to be false and untrue based on what the Scripture says. So 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And of course you ate unleavened bread with the Passover sacrifice in addition to this. First day you shall have removed leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first to the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. This was to be a national celebration. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. Now again, the words may be in your Bible, there shall be, are in italics. At least they are in mine. And that means the Hebrew does not contain those words exactly, but they've been added by the translators to try to make the sentence a little more clear. What I think is important to note is that it does not necessarily make things any clearer. In fact, it may obfuscate something. It may cover up something that God intends. On the first day, a holy convocation. That's literally the way the Hebrew reads. In other words, the holy days are holy convocations. You don't have a holy convocation on them. It's part and parcel of the day itself is to be together in the convocation, the public assembly. A convocation is a public assembly. So people who say, well, I can stay home and keep the holy day by myself, if there are not overriding reasons to do that, such as a pandemic, or such as our personal health that has fallen, or such as we're the only one in a region or hundreds of miles to be able to do that, we're the only one in our nation, unless there's some overriding reason, a holy day, and Sabbath is a holy day, is a holy convocation. It's part and parcel of what the day is. So that's important, I think, to note as we go through. So on the first day, holy convocation. On the seventh day, there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So holy days were to be feasts, and so extra food preparations could be done on those days to make the feast, make it a feast day. So you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. So two separate festivals. We might hold your finger there for a moment or drop your 3x5 card in. We'll come back to verse 18 in a moment. But I'd like to establish Leviticus chapter 2 in verse 11. Leviticus chapter 2 in verse 11. Why would we turn to Leviticus? We know the first several chapters of Leviticus talk about sacrifices. The grain offering, the peace offering, the thank offering, the burnt offering. Leviticus 2 and verse 11 establishes something important. Leviticus 2 verse 11, no grain offering which you bring to the Eternal shall be made with leaven. Remember we mentioned earlier that some would say that because unleavened bread was eaten with the Passover, therefore the Passover must be one of the 7 days of unleavened bread, must be done on that first day of unleavened bread. That's not true. Shows us here, no sacrifice was made with leaven. For you shall burn no leaven, nor any honey in an offering to the Eternal made by fire. In other words, why honey? Some have asked why. Because I don't know that there's an absolute explanation. But if these sacrifices represent Jesus Christ, does that sacrifice need to be made sweeter by adding honey? Does Christ need something added to him to be the perfect sacrifice for us? Well, obviously not. So you don't add honey to those sacrifices. Notice over in chapter 6, in verse 17. Leviticus 6, in verse 17. Leviticus 6, in verse 17. It shall not be baked with leaven. So now be baked with leaven. Talking about, again, these sacrifices, the bread. So now be baked with leaven. I have given it as their portion of my offerings made by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the trespass offering. So these things that even Aaron and his sons would eat, that would be offered, were not made with leaven. So if the priests were going to eat leavened bread, they would have to make it themselves outside of the whole sacrificial system. Notice over in chapter 10. Chapter 10, in verse 12. Leviticus 10, in verse 12. Moses spoke to Aaron and to Eleazar and to Ithamar, his sons who were left. Take the grain offering that remains of the offerings made by fire to the Eternal, and eat it without leaven beside the altar, for it is most holy. So we could turn to others, but I hope that's sufficient to show that simply because unleavened bread was eaten with the Passover, it did not make it one of the 7 days of unleavened bread. All sacrifices were with unleavened grain or bread. So let's go back then to Exodus chapter 12. In verse 18, again to emphasize two separate festivals clearly were ordained, not a festival on top of the other festival, starting during the days of unleavened bread. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at even. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native in the land. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread. And then he goes on to describe the picking out of the lamb and the process that they would go through to sacrifice that lamb. With that, let's go on to a fourth point. A fourth point about the Exodus 12 Passover is this. Israel's record was spotty at best. That's a polite way of saying, most of the time, you know what, they didn't do it right, or didn't do it at all. And we think oftentimes of the Jews keeping this Passover perfectly for thousands of years and still doing it to this day. It's simply not true, not according to the biblical record. Turn with me, if you would, to 2 Chronicles chapter 30. The books of Kings and Chronicles, in fact, Ezra, we'll get to that in a little while, show very clearly that the Passover was often not kept, it seems, at all. Or if it was kept, in some cases, it wasn't kept properly. It wasn't kept as a nation. No doubt some individuals preserved certain things along the way, but often the nation was so wrapped up with idolatry that it simply didn't keep the Passover. before the days of unleavened bread. They had to be rediscovered during certain portions of Israel's history. 2 Chronicles chapter 30, in verse 4. Maybe we'll back up to verse 1, get some of the background. Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah, also wrote letters to Ephraim and Manasseh, that they should come to the house of the Eternal at Jerusalem to keep the Passover to the Eternal God of Israel. For the king and his leaders and all the assembly in Jerusalem had agreed to keep the Passover in the second month. Well, why were they doing that? Because they had just rediscovered the need to keep the Passover. And they could not do it according to the guidelines because none of the priests, it seemed, were cleansed in time for this. So they decided, since God allowed through Moses to have a second Passover kept in the case that the first had to be missed, they decided that they would all keep the Passover in the second month. Verse 3, for they could not keep it at the regular time because a sufficient number of priests had not consecrated themselves, nor had the people gathered together at Jerusalem. And the matter pleased the king and all the assembly, so they resolved to make a proclamation throughout all Israel from Beersheba to Dan that they should come to keep the Passover to the Eternal God of Israel at Jerusalem, since they had not done it for a long time in the prescribed manner. What do we begin to see as different about this Passover than the Passover we were reading in Exodus 12? In Exodus 12, were there priests needing to be consecrated to do the sacrifices? And the answer is no. In the Exodus 12 Passover, each family killed the lamb themselves. But by the time of Hezekiah, we see that now that they're occupying the promised land, that these sacrifices were designed, or at least they began to be interpreted, that they needed to all be done at Jerusalem. So since there was one central place of worship, the Passover, over the course of centuries, you'll see, becomes an institutionalized celebration rather than a family celebration. So, in this case, there's not enough priests cleansed to sacrifice all these animals. So the assumption was the priests had to sacrifice these animals. So they bumped it back. We're going to keep the second Passover that God inspired Moses to talk about rather than the first. Verse 6. Then the runners went throughout all Israel and Judah with letters from the king and leaders and spoke according to the command of the king. Children of Israel, return to the Eternal God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. What were they doing? They were worshiping idols. They weren't keeping the Passover. So again, what we see is because of unfaithfulness to God and to the Passover that God had ordained and the holy days, etc., it was felt that much more control needed to be exercised so as to have the established process kept pure the way it needed to be. So what we see is a change from a family celebration to an institutionalized celebration. And that in this case, the priests would be the ones killing the lambs. So people would gather at Jerusalem, and then they would eat the Passover there. So children of Israel, return to the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And then he will return to the remnant of you who have escaped from the hand of the king of Assyria, kings of Assyria. And do not be like your fathers and your brethren who trespassed against the eternal God of their fathers, so that he gave them up to desolation as you see. Do not be stiff-necked as your fathers were, but yield yourselves to the eternal. Enter his sanctuary, which he has sanctified forever, and serve the eternal your God, that the fierceness of his wrath may turn away from you. So again, because of unfaithfulness, now we see an institutionalizing of the Passover itself, where the sacrifices would be brought to Jerusalem, they would be killed by the priest, they would be distributed to the people, they would then roast and eat them. Verse 9, for if you return to the Eternal, your brethren and your children will be treated with compassion by those who lead them captive, so that they may come back to this land. For the Eternal your God is gracious and merciful, will not turn his face from you if you return to him. So the runners passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh as far as Zebulun, but they laughed at them and mocked them. So a large portion of Israel never did return to keeping the Passover. It's a very sad thing. Turn over to 2 Kings. Got to go backwards to 2 Kings in chapter 23. 2 Kings 23. Again, because the Passover had long periods of disobedience, we might say, Israel had long periods of disobedience regarding the Passover. The Passover clearly changed over the course of time in the way that it was administered. Very different from the Exodus 12 family celebration. Here in 2 Kings chapter 23, we'll just read a very brief excerpt about Josiah. Good little King Josiah, we might say. Started when he was 8 and grew from there. But he reinstitutes the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, just as Hezekiah had to do that later. 2 Kings 23 and verse 21. The king then commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover to the Eternal your God, as it is written in this book of the covenant. They hadn't been doing it. Such a Passover surely had never been held since the days of the judges who judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. So it just hadn't been kept. And certainly hadn't been kept on a national scale the way God had originally instructed it to be done. Let's look to the book of Ezra now. Israel, of course, goes into captivity by the hand of the Assyrians. 130 years later, Judah goes into captivity under the hand of the Babylonians. Then God allows repentant Jews to return to Jerusalem. So what's one of the things that they desire to do? Well, they desire to reestablish the keeping of the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And what we'll come to see very clearly, that by the time of Ezra, now just a few hundred years before Jesus Christ's appearance, we have an institutionalized Passover that is clearly set, and this is the way the Jews, while the temple existed, kept the Passover. Ezra chapter 6, beginning in verse 19. And the descendants of the captivity kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. For the priests and Levites had purified themselves. Again, did we read anything about priests and Levites being required in Exodus 12? And the answer is no, because it was a family, an individual celebration, we might say. So now, because of unfaithfulness, the Jews gathered it together, and only the priests could sacrifice the lambs, and only the Levites could do the processing of the lambs, and then they were passed out to the families involved. So the priests, verse 20, and the Levites had purified themselves. All of them were ritually clean. They slaughtered the Passover lambs for all the descendants of the captivity, for their brethren, the priests, and for themselves. So the priests oversaw it, and the Levites did the physical work of the slaughter. So then those lambs, those dead lambs, we might say, those processed lambs were distributed to the people. Verse 21, then the children of Israel who had returned from the captivity ate together with all who had separated themselves from the filth of the nations of the land in order to seek the Lord, the God of Israel. And they kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy. And the Eternal made them joyful and turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. So by the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, we very clearly have a national, we might say, an institutionalized Passover. Very different from Passover of Exodus 12. But now we understand, did every single individual in the area keep it in this manner? And the answer is no. What is interesting to note is that there were some who still kept the family-style Passover as they kept the feast of the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. How do we know that? Well, when we come to the New Testament, we'll see that some individuals, and Galilee was an area particularly noted for this, they kept the Passover according to the Exodus 12 guidelines, as opposed to the institutionalized Passover. And of course, the reason for that is because as the Passover became institutionalized, it was actually kept on the wrong night. Rather than keeping it at the beginning of the 14th, as God had instructed it, they began keeping it at the end of the 14th. Well, why would you do that? Well, when you institutionalized, hundreds of lambs would have to be slaughtered. If you start slaughtering lambs at sunset on the 14th, how do you process all those lambs by this group of Levites? How do you process all these lambs and get them out to the people in time to eat them before midnight when the death angel had traditionally been sent out? Well, you can't do that. So they would actually wait till the next day. And it said, since it's at even, they began to define at even anytime after the sun hits its zenith at noon and starts to go the other direction towards sunset, that's evening. So they redefined what the Bible actually said at twilight. And it's now anytime after noon. So the priest would literally begin killing lambs sometime after that zenith of the sun on the day of the 14th, but then not actually give those lambs out to people to eat until that evening. So that's in part how that tradition changed from what God had instructed to a Jewish celebration on the day of unleavened bread instead of on the day of the Passover. Now let's go back for one other point before we come to the New Testament. And that is point number 5. Passover is always associated with the 14th, not the 15th. Passover is always associated with the 14th, not the 15th. Well, how do we know some of those things? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12. The very name of the service is called the Passover. And it refers to that time when the angel of death, as we'll call him here, passed over the Israelites. Now, since the Israelites left Egypt on the 15th, they were told not to go out of their homes until daylight. When, if that was the case, we'll see that the Bible talks about them leaving on the 15th, while it was yet dark. So how could they leave when God told them to stay inside? Well, the death angel began at midnight. Did every household have someone die at that stroke of midnight? Or was it something like the Cecil B. DeMille version, where the death angel slowly crept through the Egyptians, and one family at a time, an Egyptian drops? Would that take several hours, possibly? Who knows? We're not told. The point is, God said, don't go out until morning. Why? Well, then it's light. It's safe. You can go out. So let's look at that. Here in Exodus chapter 12, in verse 21, Moses called for all the elders and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourselves according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. We've noted how that changed over the course of time from a family celebration to an institutionalized celebration. And again, all those things are done with good reason. They wanted to protect the integrity of the Passover, so they institutionalized it. So you can understand why it's just not what God said to do. And so you have all the error that crept into it as well. Verse 22, you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is on the in the basin, and strike the lintel, the two doorposts, with blood that is in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. So you cannot go out until morning. We'll see other scriptures that show that Israel left Egypt at night. Well, if they left at night, it couldn't have this sacrifice could not have happened on the 15th day at the start of the day of unleavened bread. It would have to be later. Earlier, I should say. Verse 23. For the Eternal will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. In other words, the ordinance of the Passover, not the blood itself. It shall come to pass when you come to the land which the Eternal your God will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service, the service of the Passover, not the blood on the door. And it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Eternal, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so. Just as the Eternal commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. So the Passover on the 14th at even or at twilight, as the sun sets and before it gets dark, that's when the animal was sacrificed. Let's look at another interesting scripture in this regard. Let's look at a few more here. Continuing on in verse 29 first. Came to pass at midnight that the Eternal struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. So it began at midnight, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. So Pharaoh arose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. So he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among the people, my people, both you and the children of Israel. Go and serve the Eternal as you have said. Take your flocks, your herds, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Remember, they were to eat dressed, ready to go. Now the children had done according to the word of Moses. They asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, gold, and clothing. So as they came out of their homes in the morning, because again, they were told, do not come out until morning. As they came out in the morning, the Egyptians were terribly, terribly frightened of them. And so they took booty, you might say. They took payment for their hundreds of years of slavery to take along with them. So again, that could not happen unless the Passover took place at the beginning of the 14th day. The death angel strikes at midnight. Then they come out of their houses in the morning. They loot the Egyptians. They gather together. And by that night, they're ready to leave. Notice Numbers 33. Numbers 33 is just a summary statement or two that we might say. It doesn't intend to give historical detail, but it gives a summary statement. And I think it's logical that we can see that the Egyptians had their firstborn died. They come out of their houses in the morning. Every household has dead. The Israelites are commanded to leave by Pharaoh. They go throughout the area looting the Egyptians. Obviously at that time the Egyptians would begin the process of burying their dead during the next few days. So These are the journeyings in verse 1, Numbers 33. These are the journeyings of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. So you can see these are summary kind of statements. Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Eternal. And these are their journeys according to their starting points. So you have this overview of their trip. Verse 3 says, they departed from Ramesses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. Began their departure. As we saw, they were told to stay in their homes until it was morning. So that was still the 14th day. It took them time to get things together and leave at the beginning of the 15th day as it gets to be dark, and they head out from there, traveling on that 15th day, that first day of unleavened bread. They departed from Ramesses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover. The children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians. So on the day after the Passover, not the daylight period after the Passover, but the day after, they kept the Passover on the 14th. They left Egypt on the 15th. For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn whom the Eternal had killed among them. Also, on their gods, the Eternal had executed judgments. So then Israel begins to depart. So it's logical that the Egyptians buried their dead during that daylight portion of the 14th, as soon as they could in the morning, and Israel gathers to depart, and they depart that evening. So on the 15th day. So Passover clearly associated with the 14th, days of unleavened bread clearly associated with the 15th. Last but not least, last point, number 5. Or is this 6? 6, I guess. I have letter F here. I'm translating it into numbers as we go. Point number 6. Christ kept the Passover on the 14th. Now you might add a subhead to that point. Christ kept it on a different day than the Jewish community, or the whole of the Jewish community, on the whole. As we said, there were some who still kept the family style celebration, and Jesus Christ was one of those. Now that makes sense, does it not? That Jesus Christ would follow the guidelines written down in Exodus chapter 12, not the institutionalized Passover that the Jews had begun to keep because of sin and idolatry. It would make sense that Christ would go back to Exodus chapter 12 for the instructions that he inspired to be written, and he would keep it accordingly, just as he had written it. Turn to the book of Luke in chapter 22. Luke chapter 22. Notice in verse 1, we're told, now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is called Passover. Now, in Jewish parlance, Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread are all referred to as Passover. In the same way, we would refer to the Feast of Tabernacles. We really intend, if we ask someone, where are you going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? What we mean by that is, where are you going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles in the last great day, or the eighth day? There are two festivals there, but we refer to them under one title. And the Jews came to do that with the Passover as well. And again, since they institutionalize it, and they're killing those lambs just before the first day of unleavened bread begins, they call that a part of the Passover. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread drew near, which is called Passover. Is it called Passover in the Old Testament? No. Is it called Passover by God? No. Two separate festivals in Exodus 12 and the rest of that portion of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, but not so later on. The Jews lump the two together. Drop down to verse 14. Well, maybe we should cover just a little bit. Verse 7. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. interesting that none of those Passover lambs were killed on the days of unleavened bread. So what is Luke referring to? Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. Did Israel eat leaven after the Passover? Well, no. That was considered the day of unleavened bread for them. But notice the way Christ kept it. How did we see Israel kept it from the time of Ezra at least onward? All the lambs were killed by priests at the temple and then distributed from there. Not so with Christ. He sent Peter and John saying, "You go prepare the Passover for us." Oh, not the priests prepare the Passover for us. You prepare the Passover. Well, how are they to do that? Well, they were to get the prescribed ingredients, the things that Christ or God inspired to eat with the Passover, the bitter herbs, the lamb itself. You go prepare the Passover. So they said to him, "Where do you want us to prepare?" So apparently for the Galileans, it was not unusual at all for them to continue in the pastoral celebration of the Passover, the individual family Passover. Part of the reason for that may have been the distance to the temple, etc., etc. They kept doing the family-style Passover, as God instructed. He said to them, "Behold, when you have entered a city, a man will come and meet you, carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house which he enters. Then you shall say to the master of the house, 'The teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?'" So this was going to be the Passover that they would eat. This was the Passover of Exodus 12. They would eat it. Now, lest you think there's some Svengoolie kind of thing going on here, Christ made arrangements in advance. He didn't say, follow this man, and then say, "Where does the teacher want us to eat? How about up here?" No, Christ arranged this in advance. He knew what time this man comes out to get water. He said, "Meet him there. Tell him the master's ready. Show me the room." So that's what they did. "Then he will show you a large, furnished upper room. There make ready." Not only did Christ arrange in advance for the room, he arranged in advance for it to be furnished. Furnished with what? With all that was needed for the Passover itself. So, in all likelihood, the food that they would eat, the bitter herbs and the other things, were already there. Maybe the lamb was already there, already arranged. Hadn't been slaughtered yet, but it was there, ready to be used. He had made the advance. This Passover was too important to leave to chance. So, verse 13, "They went and found it just as he had said to them, and they prepared the Passover." What would that mean? Well, that would mean these individuals would have done the slaughtering of the lamb, would have done the preparing of the fire. The furnishings were already there, but these things would have been taken care of. "And when the hour had come," what do you mean the hour had come? The sunset had taken place, the lamb had been slaughtered, the lamb had been roasted, and now it was time to sit down to eat. "When the hour had come, he sat down, the 12 apostles with him, and he said to them, 'With fervent desire, I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer.'" He was going to eat the Passover just as Exodus 12 had prescribed. But there was something unique about this Passover. He said, "I have desired with fervent desire. I really desire to eat this Passover with you." What do you mean, this Passover? This is what we often call the transitional Passover. The transitional Passover. From the Exodus 12 family slaughter of the lamb and roasting of the lamb and eating of the lamb to the New Testament Passover. So we're making the transition from the Old Testament Passover here to the New Testament Passover. Really desired. He really looked forward to teaching them this truth. So he took the cup and gave thanks, and he institutes these new symbols. Take this and divide it among yourselves, for I say to you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes. And he took the bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Likewise, he also took the cup after supper. After what supper? After the roasted lamb. So we see Christ changing the symbolism of the Passover, taking the lamb and the bitter herbs and all those accoutrements and setting them aside, saying, now the Passover is fundamentally updated. We still keep the Passover, but now with new symbols. He took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. So he instituted, instead of a dead lamb looking forward to Christ dying for the world, now we keep the Passover looking both backward on Christ's sacrifice and forward to his return. This cup, he says, is the new covenant of my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of the betrayer is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goes as it has been determined, but woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. And it goes on to talk about the betrayal that Judas would then bring about. So we know that Jesus Christ kept the Passover 24 hours before most of the Jewish community. They would not have their lamb sacrificed until the next afternoon. Those would be distributed, and then they would be eaten by the Jews. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Christ clearly kept the Passover at the beginning of the 14th day. And 1 Corinthians 11 instructs us in the same way. Paul teaches the Gentile congregations, in this case Corinth, that the Passover is to be done exactly as Jesus Christ did it. Paul gives the instruction that there is no longer to be a meal associated with the Passover. That was the old covenant Passover. There is now to be bread and wine. Of course, John 13 introduces foot washing. Paul doesn't comment on that here, but we'll just make that note as we go by. 1 Corinthians 11 in verse 23. For I received from the Lord. So he was given this instruction directly by Jesus Christ. That which I also delivered to you, I faithfully passed on exactly what I was given. That the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. Christ was not betrayed on the holy day. Remember, he was crucified on the day before the holy day. And the Jews went to Pilate saying, hey, we don't want these characters hanging up there, crucified on the holy day. So do we have permission to break their legs? And of course, they came and found that Christ was already dead. So they didn't want these men hanging up there on the stakes during the holy day. So when did Christ receive, or when did Paul receive this instruction? Well, we're told he received it while he was in the wilderness, but what night? On the same night. So very clearly, the New Testament clearly shows that we keep the Passover on the beginning of the 14th day, not at the end of the 14th day. On the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So rather than sacrificing a lamb that looks forward to Christ's sacrifice, we now take bread and wine that look back on the sacrifice that he gave. Do this in remembrance, a memorial. In the same manner, he also, verse 25, took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. So we look backward on the sacrifice of Christ only until he returns. And we won't have to do it in quite the same way. We'll be spirit beings. It'll be a different type of existence for us. Well, so brethren, I hope that going through the Passover in this way, as part of the preparation for the keeping of the Passover in the days of unleavened bread, has been helpful. It is clear that the weight of evidence lies in keeping the Passover at the beginning of the 14th day of the first month. Therefore, that is the established practice of the Church of God. Let's do our part now to properly prepare for this upcoming event.